The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 65 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolates and apps, providence or productivity, you can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sant and welcome to episode 65 of The Catholics of Oz. I hope you're well wherever you are. Today I am joined by my wonderful sister who is still locked down like the rest of us. Caroline Knight, how are you today?
I am fine, thank you, despite the lockdown, but yeah.
Yes. How do you feel? So at the time of recording, term 3 ended yesterday for all of our school kids. How do you feel that now that the term is over and you don't have to homeschool at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. Have a bit of a break for the next 2 weeks, not have to keep watching the kids are on their school, on their iPads or Chromebooks having their class, or, you know, not drawing or fiddling or falling off their chair or playing Play-Doh, or you don't know what the kind of things I walk in on them doing.
Yes. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also joining us is Lino Sabol, also locked down with us, but still smiling. Lino, how are you going today?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm doing well. Yeah, lockdown again. But we've had a few changes of our lockdown. Hey, guys, is it now
one?
We can go beyond 5.
Oh, yeah.
No, we can go 10Ks now. Working.
Yes.
Oh, hey guys, we'll have to face each other on if we go picnicking.
We can have picnic. It seems that the reward
yeah.
is a picnic for yes. if you are yeah. single or yeah. double vaxxed.
Yes, but depending. So I'm in the single vaxxed crowd.
For now, yes.
So I can meet one other person. From another household, within the space of 10 kilometres
at a
park between our houses.
Lindsay, I, as a double-vaxxed person,
yes.
may meet with 5 people for a picnic
from another household.
It's still from 2 households.
2 households, yeah.
Yes. So I'm sorry that you can only meet one.
You're in the single class, and
Lino, right. are you double vax? You are now, aren't you? So I can meet you and Bernadette.
Oh, oh wow.
Along with my family at a park
and have a picnic.
Yes,
but Victorians still cannot picnic after 9 PM. I just got to put that out there. Right?
Also, don't you dare have any alcohol on your picnic.
Oh,
not allowed.
No,
you can take your mask off for a Coke, but do not take your mask off for a glass of Chardonnay.
A glass of Chardonnay. Right. Oh,
yes.
Okay.
You know what really annoys me? I'm really happy that the 10 kilometers is there because it increases our options of what my family can,
yes.
can go and
well,
do.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
I can meet you and I can meet my sister now.
Yeah. So. Oh, that's
awesome.
True.
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
I still can't get to Churchill Park from my house.
Uh-huh, oh, we can.
It's just over 10K. It's like, what?
We can even get to Listerfield Park now, which I rapped
yeah,
about.
We can get to Listerfield. Oh, we can meet at Listerfield
Ooh,
then.
Oh, okay. That's funny how that works. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, cool. Yeah, cool. Be quiet. The Victorian government's listening.
Yeah. Let them listen.
Yeah.
Ooh,
they might learn something. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
We love you, Dan. Anyway.
Yes.
We love you, Dan.
I'm hoping with the 10-kilometre limit that I'll be able to keep my car batteries a bit more charged than they were last year. Yes.
Oh,
I learned my lesson. I forgot what episode it was last year. It would have been around this time last year, if it was where I ranted and cried about the both of our car batteries dying.
Yeah.
I've been a lot more proactive about doing something about that. So when I go shopping to the shops that are a 1 minute drive, it actually takes me 20 minutes to get there now. Because I kind of go up the
freeway
5 kilometers, down the freeway 5 kilometers.
Yes, yes, that's right.
You know, orbit my suburb at 5 kilometers for a while. And then,
you might be even able to go to Dandenong Shopping Centre now. I don't know. Can you make it from here?
I think we can.
Yes, it's 10.
Yes.
Are you able to Google it?
Yeah.
Google Maps.
I know. I've got to get Google Maps out and get all these distances.
Yeah. You can go down to the plaza for a bit of a shop now.
Yes.
And
this is what we're dealing with, people.
Yeah.
This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Small freedoms.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for the outdoor barbecues. Or the outdoor picnics, I should say.
Yeah.
I'm putting my thumb up. No one can see that. Yeah. Giving the thumbs up.
All right, so let's get this show on the
alcohol
road.
Alcohol free.
Yeah. What's that? Sorry.
Alcohol free.
Alcohol free. Yeah.
Barbecue.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. No beer.
Yes. This podcast does not endorse outdoor drinking during a pandemic.
No, just at home in the pandemic. Yeah. Not that I actually drink. Anyway.
Keep your fluids up. All right. Yeah. So just a reminder to everyone who's listening that you can find posts about all of our shows at StarQuest's Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia and also on Twitter where their handle is at SQPN. So if you see any posts about our show, we would love for you to spread the word by sharing them online with your friends, family, and anyone else who you think would enjoy listening to us. Maybe when we're not so loopy about lockdown, but, you know, maybe there's someone who can relate to that as well. If you're new to listening to the Catholics of Oz today, first of all, welcome. We're so happy to have you with us. We would love if you would subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast player. SQPN also hosts all of its shows, including the Catholics of Oz on YouTube. So just search for SQPN on YouTube, and then you can subscribe and you can hit the bell to get notifications when new episodes of this show and all the other great shows on StarQuest are released. And don't forget to leave us feedback. These great positive 5-star reviews are awesome for us. They help the podcasting platforms to promote us a little bit more so that other people can notice us and listen to the show as well. And really, like I've said before, connecting to all of you who are listening is what we're all about. So that's the little spiel for sharing the show with everyone. Let's move on and talk about some topics. So Lena and Caroline, I wanted to start by giving a bit of an update on one of the biggest things that's happening in the Archdiocese of Melbourne at the moment, which is the Archdiocese where we live and go to church. And that is, we did a couple of shows, so I can't remember all the show numbers of all the shows that we did, but we did a show on the Patrick Oration, which was the speech that Archbishop Comensoli gave earlier this year, outlining his vision for the diocese. Then we did a show on the initiative to talk about missions, the mission setup of families of mission parishes in the Archdiocese of Melbourne, which is probably the biggest project that's going on right now in the Archdiocese. We did an episode with Archbishop Comensoli as well, and he was a wonderful guest returning to the show. And what episode number did we decide that was?
58. I know we've got
58. There we are. So if anyone wants to listen 58. I'd advise anyone who listens to our show, go to episode 58 and listen to him. And just, again, the great guest that he was and the wonderful things that he talked to us about. We did talk about the mission parishes and ask him some questions about that as well, which and it was very kind of him to be generous with his answers there too. And so I wanted to talk more about, give a bit of an update about what's happening with this process at the moment. Because there are, I've been hearing concerns from people and in different kinds of ways. So sometimes it's just, and again, I'm not well connected where like everyone's coming to me and saying, "Hey, Lindsay," and it's nothing like that. But just in general chats with different people that I talk to from time to time. And so the concerns that people have raised, I think it's okay to be concerned, and it's okay to be unsure, and it's okay to be worried, because change always brings a bit of uncertainty. That's part of the process of change, is that we actually don't know sometimes what's going to happen on the other side, because we change with the best intentions, but there are always unforeseen circumstances. There are unforeseen things that happen. And so we can be fearful of change, and I understand that as well. I guess what we try and do as Catholics, at least when we're going through change, is listen to the Spirit, listen to where God is guiding us, and what God is equipping us to do in the future. So more than a few people have shared with me a petition that's been posted online. And the petition is basically written to Archbishop Comensoli, and it's sharing concerns about the process. I don't want to belittle the people or person. I don't know, because it doesn't say who. I mean, it's anonymous at the moment, right? Maybe they'll come out and say who they are later on, right? So I don't know who it is. So I don't want to go and judge the intentions of the people or judge the people themselves. We talk about by their fruits, you'll know them, you'll know what they're all about anyway. But I did want to talk about some of the things that were raised, because I think some of the concerns that are raised in this petition have already been addressed. And if they haven't already been addressed, they can be addressed in a way that's pastoral. And I think the pastoral addressing of these concerns is the most important thing. I'm part of the parish council at my parish, so we've obviously been talking about this and, you know, talking about the ups and downs, the goods and bads, the fears and the joys that come with this, and reasonable discussions as well. No one's, you know, gone on the soapbox and said, we're not doing this, or, you know, it's nothing like that. It's just, what will it mean for this? What will it mean for that? How would we, you know, there's great questions, right? And the other things that our parish council, without revealing what the parish council has been, you know, saying, you know, we're not here to gossip. But our discussions have always been about, what do we want to bring to the table when we eventually start talking to other parishes next year? That could potentially be part of this family of parishes mission that will possibly be set up for us at some point in the future. So that's the discussion we've had there. One thing I've been saying to everyone is, as we do this, we have to ensure that no one is left behind. There have been concerns like, what about elderly people? You know, how will they keep up with changes if it means changes to mass times or confessions or whatever? You know, fair enough. What implications will, you know, someone, you know, raise the point about, you know, how will it support people with disabilities, you know, if there are changes as well when they're used to having this and that? These are all really, you know, really important concerns. All I could say when I was discussing it was, whatever concerns we raise, we have to ensure that no one's left behind. The idea of setting up a family is that everyone is in the family, not that the family is for some and not for others. And it's good that these concerns are being raised, because these are fair, legitimate concerns, and you want to listen to everyone and address everything. Because I said there are things we know, there are things we don't know as well as we go through this process. There's always going to be an unforeseen, you know, there's going to be a pandemic, or there's going to be this or that. There's all these things that we can't predict as we set things up with the best of intentions.
So it's just a lot of variables, aliens, a lot of variables and what's going on. Is it a 5-year ongoing thing? Ooh. Did I just get a scoop? No. 5 years? No.
The process started this year in terms of getting the word out, but then it could take. The Archbishop has said, even on the Melbourne Catholic website, the Take the Way of the Gospel page that's about this, that some may be set up quite rapidly, and some might take up to 5 years to set up.
Gotcha.
But I think that would depend on who's setting it up, what they plan. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty and unknowns that have to be dealt with as they pop up. I wanted to discuss just briefly some of the concerns that were part of this petition, and maybe just make some commentary on it. The one thing that I'm not entirely enthused about with the petition is the certainty that it seems to assume in terms of what a disaster this might be. So I think it's important to raise concerns always in everything that you do, because that's how you problem solve. And I think it's important that we go with this from a problem solving perspective rather than, these are the problems, throw the whole thing out. You know what I mean? If that makes sense.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm. So look, mm. I'll just read a little bit from here and there. So it says, first of all, look, good intentions, right? It says that the people who put this petition together, they are one in mind with the Archbishop in wanting to revitalize parishes. All right. We are all of, all for a renewal in our parishes and the Archdiocese itself. So that, you know, they obviously see what the Archbishop has stated, that there is a need for changes is necessary. That's really good. But the objections start like this. However, the proposed restructure will change the nature of our local church forever. This is how it will affect Catholics in Melbourne, including you and your family. I think it would be fair to say, here are some potential problems we might see that needs to be addressed as we move forward, rather than saying this is how it will affect you and your family. Because it's a sort of a one-size-fit-all statement that says this is what your missions are going to look like. So it says things like, you will lose your parish priest. Most missions will have the leadership of two priests. One will be called a moderator, and they will together have responsibility for up to 5 to 6 parishes. Your priest will no longer reside at the parish. The priest of each mission will live together and drive to each parish to administer the sacraments. And there, you know, there's other points that are made. They quote Pope Francis about saying, you know, that priests need to have the smell of their sheep on them. Fair enough. All right. And they're saying that this goes against the spirit of that. It says mass times will be severely reduced. In most missions, a parish will have no weekday masses and only one on the weekend. Confession at most parishes will be severely reduced or disappear. Adoration will be severely reduced or abandoned altogether. Your local parish community will diminish. There will be no individual parish newsletter, no pastoral associate. Presbyteries will be empty, and the parish community will be disjointed as parishioners drive around to various churches to seek fulfillment of their sacramental needs. And then there's a few other things that are there as well. So I would be saying that as groups are setting up their mission parishes, this is a list of things that you actually want to avoid as much as possible. So there will be some give or take in some cases, but if you're looking at renewal, for me, renewal is all about growth, not reduction, if that makes sense. So this sounds like what they expect, the people who put this petition together, what they expect is a permanent reduction of things that are available to Catholics in our archdiocese, and that reduction will be there forever. So this is what the church will look like for the next 100 years. I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating that a little bit. But actually, what the archdiocese said is this is about parish families coming together and pooling their resources so that there can be more things available to Catholics. So I don't know that the concerns on here are completely... so maybe they're legitimate. So I don't want to say they're not legitimate, but I'm concerned that to say that this is what you will be experiencing, all right, this is how it will affect Catholics in Melbourne, including you and your family, I don't think that that's a fair statement. I think it would be fairer to say, here are some potential problems we see going forward that we think should be addressed as the process continues, and then list some of the, you know, and then list there. But really, what happens now is that problems like this, each mission area is going to be unique, different. They won't all have the same sort of leadership, governance, etc., because it's up to them to set up how they want things to run. So as they set things up to make sure that these things run properly, as I said before, what you'd want to ensure is that no one is left behind. And again, this is not about an administrative process, although administration is part of it, but this is about how will the churches of Melbourne show Christ to everyone? How will Christ be visible in our church through its people moving forward? And this is the most important thing. How will the gospel be proclaimed to everyone? They've had a company that's pulled out statistics from the census and other things as well. There are thousands of Catholics around all of our parishes, but only a very small percentage of them are actually engaged in parish life. So they've identified as Catholic in the census, but we don't see them. So how are we going to bring the gospel to them? And we're not going to bring the gospel to them by being sheltered within our parish and shielding it from the rest of the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And so if we want, you know, if as it says here, they want priests and, you know, I'd say Catholics themselves as well, to smell like the flock, to smell like their sheep. The sheep aren't just the people who are turning up to a mass on a Sunday. The sheep are actually out there in society. And at the moment, we're not equipped to be able to share the gospel with them the way we're set up. And so we're looking at ensuring that the gospel permeates and inspires people who do go to church and who are engaged, but also that it's accessible to people who are not. How do we help them to hear the gospel? So I'll just finish very quickly by sharing that I think that a lot of the concerns of this petition are addressed, or there is a hint that they can be addressed at the Melbourne Catholic website, which is set up to introduce this idea of mission. So the website is, and we'll share it in our show notes, melbournecatholic.org/about/mission, and it's called Take the Way of the Gospel. And as a guiding statement, take the way of the gospel in everything you do in this setup, take the way of the gospel. That's a fair enough direction for us, I think. So because in the petition as well, it talks about a lack of consultation with the faithful. People don't know about it. There's actually a roadmap on the website that addresses this, because there was an introduction to priests earlier this year. There was an introduction to parish leaders, which I went to shortly after the priest meeting. Then there was the discussion with regions. So we just had the regional meeting. Unfortunately, we had to have it on Zoom because of the pandemic and everything. And then the next step from here is for parishes to now share and inform parishioners about this whole mission process that's being undertaken. Parishioners were also informed earlier this year in the Archbishop's pastoral letter on the Feast of Pentecost. So the word is going out, and now there is a bigger information campaign that parishes are being asked to engage in the next couple of months. The next step on the roadmap after that is that next year, parish leaders from different parishes will start meeting to talk about what this could look like. So the potential, what are the possibilities? What are the pitfalls? What is it that's unique about our particular group of parishes, and what might happen from there? So there is on this website, there are a whole lot of things that are being discussed. The one thing I want to do to share, though, is that lay Catholics and priests, obviously, as well, but lay Catholics are invited to participate in this process. It is not just a secret leaders meeting or anything like that. People are being asked to be involved. So, for example, the first thing it says is, we invite you to pray. Each of us is called to proclaim the gospel, and this work begins above all with prayer. At Pentecost, the apostles were huddled away in their upper room before the Holy Spirit came upon them to give them precisely what Jesus had promised, the power to become witnesses throughout Judea and Samaria, and indeed to the ends of the earth. We are not alone in this journey. Let us entrust this work to the Spirit and be open to its promptings along the way. May we act with the same boldness of the early church and preach the good news of Jesus Christ the best way possible in our time and place. Secondly, we encourage you to get in touch with your local parish priest and parish leadership teams and explore ways that you might assist them, ensuring that all the lay faithful are invited into this discussion at the local level. All the lay faithful, it says there. What I said, nobody left behind. Everyone is being invited to be part of this process to talk about it. Finally, people can provide feedback already. So, all right, you might want to sign a petition, but remember that you can actually provide feedback directly to the Archdiocese. There's an email, mission@cam.org.au. This is the start of an ongoing conversation following recent gatherings by leaders and clergy. A series of regional gatherings will take place, da da da. In the meantime, you can get in touch with the Proclaim Office for mission renewal by emailing this email address. So what I'd suggest to Catholics in Melbourne is read everything. Don't just read a petition and say that the petition sums up everything. Go ahead if you want to and read it if someone shares it with you. Read what the Archdiocese has actually officially produced on their website. And on their website, not only have they produced this description, but the pastoral letter is there. The presentation of the text of Archbishop Comensoli's presentation to clergy is there. The PowerPoint slides to clergy and leaders is up there. And the church's instruction, the pastoral conversion of the parish community in the service of evangelizing mission of the church, long title, by the way, this is from the Congregation of Clergy. And there are other resources as well. And there's references to Archbishop Comensoli's Patrick Oration. So there is enough for Catholics to be fully informed. And it is the responsibility of parishes and parish leaders to obviously disseminate this information as well. But the information is there. There is, and I need to say as well, I'm not officially an official of the church. I don't work for the Archdiocese of Melbourne. I don't have a job with the Archdiocese of Melbourne. So I've got no skin in the game in terms of protecting anyone or speaking nicely about anyone. I'll obviously raise concerns, in my parish council and with others when I get a chance to, as I see them pop up as well. But what I think is, what I'm getting at is, let's be informed before we start making conclusions about what this is going to look like. And with the petition, the people who've put it together, I hold no criticism of them. I only have the love of God for them, because I know that they're Catholics who want the best for the church as well. So I just invite anyone who receives the petition or hears a not so positive word about the process to balance that with what's being said by the Archdiocese as well. So that was a long spiel. Sorry about that, guys. You can wake up now. But Caroline, any thoughts about all of this?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. I mean, to me, when I read the petition, and this isn't a criticism either, but really it did seem like maybe a list of fears and uncertainties. And that's quite understandable when you're looking at making such a big change, you know. So that's fair enough. But I think mission is the real word here. And when I think of missions, you know, I think of, say, the missionary priest that we knew very well growing up, Missionary Society of St. Paul, you know, and our own Uncle Father Alex, who is in Peru there in Arequipa, in the missions. It's a very mission approach where you won't have a priest necessarily living on his own, but he'll be living with a couple of other priests, and they'll have several churches, and they'll all go out to the different churches, and they will perform mass, they'll provide sacraments, you know, and such, and they'll provide other services. Obviously, in a country where he is in Peru, where it's poor, they provide services such as food and, you know, orphanages and, you know, women's services, elderly services, stuff like that. But, I mean, I think it's a good thing in a way to have the mission approach rather than the closed parish approach. I think it's a bit refreshing because I think a parish priest also, like looking at the positives for a parish priest, I think he can get quite overwhelmed if he is the center of the parish and he is the go-to guy for every single thing in the parish, the positives, the negatives, you know. He does mass and the sacraments, which is his main role and which he loves to do. But he also has to do the administration side of things. Mm. He has to take people's complaints. He has to get, you know, people's, you know, whatever they approach him with. I mean, he is part of our lives. He's part of our families. But it may take a bit of stress off the priest, maybe a bit of pressure off that he's in charge of this whole, how many hundreds of people, or depending where he is, how many people they have to look after, just this one person. So maybe sharing the load with another priest or a couple of other priests might help in that way. And also, you know, their different ideas together, they may, you know, may be more fruitful with all their different ideas. So yes, it's a change. We've never done this before, but maybe it's a positive thing and a lot more fruit will come from it. And like you said, Lindsay, reaching out to all those people who don't come to mass, maybe they'll see it as a more attractive option and go, oh, that looks more appealing to me, you know. Maybe, you know, let's try going back and see, you know. You know, and, yeah, it's going to be different. But I really do like the mission approach. I love the mission mentality, you know. It's a really nice, it's a really giving mentality, you know. It's that kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how it's going to work for us. Obviously, I have concerns too, but I'm curious to see how it's going to go, and it'll probably be fine.
Yeah, and we were, you know, you repeat the word mission often, and Archbishop Comensoli talked about how this was a deliberate choice as opposed to words like a cluster of parishes or a group, you know, or a, I don't know, conglomerate or whatever. You know, I'm just making that last word. I don't know what last word, yeah. Yeah. A cabal. Yeah. No, I don't mean that. Yeah. But the point is the word mission is our baptism. We're already baptized for mission. Yeah. We were confirmed for mission to go out and do this already. And like you said, it actually isn't just up to Father, you know, to the priests. I feel sorry for our priests if there's a perception that all of this work of evangelization is up to them, because it's not. The word co-responsibility has been used in the proposal of this mission, that the lay people take an equal share of responsibility of what happens in these missions, which includes an equal share of the evangelization work. Now, we can't do the sacraments. That's what the priest does. And obviously, we don't want priests. That phrase did come up in one of the leaders' meetings I went to, that we don't want priests to simply just be sacrament factories either, where their job is just
no,
you know, but,
definitely not.
Let's not chase our priests down all the time, Nasa, for confession. Like I've done that once, but hey,
yeah, but, you know, we don't want to this in the grand scheme of nobody's left behind. We don't want to sideline priests either. I think that would also be the wrong approach to say, all right, priests, you just sit in your corner and do your sacraments. And
no,
that's it.
Not of course.
It's about a partnership of the.
It's partnership, yeah.
Yeah, of the lay and the ordained faithful. We're all priests by our baptism. We're not ministerial priests like Father Michael is. But we all already have a priesthood that's given to us by Christ through our baptism to share the good news, to be Jesus or to share Jesus with others, to allow the work of the Holy Spirit to do what it needs to do, to create opportunities where grace abounds, da da da, all these different things. Yeah,
it's true.
I guess. One small point is I think maybe because a petition like this has arisen, maybe it highlights that not everybody feels like they are being included in this change. So maybe as a parishioner, you might go, hey, no one told me about this. Why are only the parish leaders meeting about this? So maybe, like you said, there is information and we are invited to take part, but maybe that just needs to be made known a bit more and advertised so that we know that we are included in this and can help to make decisions.
Definitely.
That's just coming from a layperson.
So. The next couple of months are going to be very important. We've been told now, go and share this with your parishes. So it's going to be important. Now, I know in pandemic times, it really it's so difficult, but I mean, what can you do? Send out a letter. Talk about it on your live stream, Damas. Maybe have a Zoom session. I don't know, but there's going to have to be some creative ways for now on how to do that. But yeah, but to honor the faithful who are coming to Mass, they need to be told, especially if you want to bring them on board so that no one's left behind. They do have to be, shared.
Yeah, definitely.
Lino, sorry. What are your thoughts on this?
When we first talked about this, the only concern was I don't know the word. I don't know. I like my sports analogies. A merger. It's not a merger, guys.
A merger.
Yeah. Look, it was silly. Look, it is a mission. The only thing that concerned me was if we do become a mission together. I hope it doesn't change. This is our parish name. It's like I know we won't change. It was just a fear that Holy Family will be called Holy Family. Our name will be called Southeast United. I don't know.
Southeast United. We're not a soccer club. Brisbane Lions,
Lions. I thought, it's a mission will be renamed. Who we're going to be missioning with will be the Dandenong.
Well, possibly, yeah. I mean, this is the potential. Narrewarren is the sale diocese. It could be, Endeavour Hills, Dandenong, possibly Hampton Park. Yeah, this is just potential, what it could be. That's been discussed as well. So my understanding is that the parish names would be exactly the same. So, however, what you might have is that when they're grouped together, the group itself might be called the Mission Parishes of Holy Family, St. Mary's, da-da-da-da, possibly. I mean, whatever. All right, so that's... those are discussions that happen as part of the process. The Archdiocese would obviously be involved in supporting what that could look like. They haven't just thrown us out to the wolves and said, go do it and see what happens. Support is available. Yeah. They've got people to help as well with the process.
Exactly. And so I know it's all set in stone in the sense, it's like you were saying, with all the priests in one area where they will be going to different masses and different parts of their mission. Are they going to build this facility, or are they going to be still in the parish within the parish? And will they go towards their mission in different places? Lindsay, is that they're going to do it as well?
Well, who knows? These are the questions that you need to ask. The Archbishop has expressed a preference that priests start to live together in community in these missions, which can be beneficial. I'm not a priest. I've never been a priest. Our experience is in our parish life is that we have one priest at a parish and the priest lives alone. So that's what and there may be other priests who are used to that, to their way of life. So
yes, but to say,
if it's been your way of life, it might be a change that you have
It'll
to deal
hard,
with.
Yeah.
It would be hard. Yeah. Because I don't know, if you listen to rock music all the time, suddenly you've got other people in there and you can, yeah, you have to put the Smashing Pumpkins album aside.
You've got your Lego all over the place.
Lego,
and
yeah,
all of a sudden
yeah,
someone's
right, yeah.
like pushing it off the yeah. shelf because they want
to
put
all your Star Wars toys, you know, like, yeah, it's going to be, yeah, there's all, yeah, there's some awkward things.
You've got a dog,
work,
someone
yeah.
doesn't like dogs like this. Yeah. There's going to be all these things.
Yeah. Actually, let me say this. So I was going to mention this at the end of the show and I might still do that. But last night I watched the Triple C show, which is the Corpus Christi College Seminarian. So this is the seminary that that supports people who are discerning the priesthood in Melbourne and I think in Hobart and another part of Australia. I'm not an expert in this, but they live in community for 6 years. You know what I mean? Like these guys all live together. If you know, and in this in this show, they were not apologetic about the bad habits that they have together.
Whoa,
and whatever else. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, sisters live together, nuns live together in their convents. You know, and I mean, Auntie Miriam lives with other sisters, and you know, it's not always easy, and they have to make allowances for each other and
yeah,
things like that.
So, I get to see that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. If you're listening and you live in communal life religiously, let us know. The ups and downs of it. Yeah. I listen to a podcast and you've heard it. I think you guys have heard it. Catholic Stuff You Should Know. Those guys live in community as well. So I think they've got their parishes, but they've got their community. So there are priests who are doing it successfully. And I guess the idea is that you're not alone in a sense. Yeah.
I think that's nice true. Aspect of it, you know, and they've got support, direct support, you know, and if they're like starting, if they're new and they're you know, suddenly just thrown out by themselves into a house and a parish and here that's yours, like maybe to make it a bit easier to ease into priestly life, who knows?
It would be a change, yeah, but, and we all need our space, so, you know, we live in.
Oh,
we
for live. Sure.
All of us in this podcast live with people, and Caroline, you and I live with the addition of children as well. And
I don't have my own space. I do not have that. So if they at least get their own bedroom, they're winning. They're like doing more than what I have.
If you've got somewhere to put your Lego, you're good, all right?
Yes.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. 100%. Yeah, they'll be interesting, guys. Yeah, if you had a community area for all of them together, you know, I can only imagine. Yeah, that's something we can ask Archbishop Comensoli next time we have him on. We can ask him if he has been in a community based place where he has to share with other priests or other brothers and ask him his experiences. And you can imagine that. You can imagine our two Father Michaels together if it has to happen. Father Papa Pili and Father Michael Shadwell together. I can imagine. We're pretty low key. That, hey,
that's a TV sitcom waiting to happen. I reckon.
For the life of me, I hope and pray we don't have a reality show about it. So I just it's going to be just going. No.
Yeah,
we'll go there. We'll go there.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see what happens from here. But we just wanted to offer these thoughts in our recording today. And if anyone's who's listening is in the Archdiocese of Melbourne or around the world where you've had an experience of this, we'd love to hear what people's thoughts are and, you know, what happened that was successful, what pitfalls do you need to watch out for? I mean, we're right at the start of a very long process, so we'd love to know what the experience of others are. But let's move on, because Caroline, you've got a bit of science to go through today, so let's I'm going to throw it over to you now. Why don't you tell us, first of all, about the Mars Perseverance rover, which we love, by the way.
We do.
Good old Percy there on Mars.
Percy! I love that one!
Who collected a rock sample from the surface of Mars. What happened there, Caroline?
It sure did. So, yes, Mars Perseverance rover collected its first rock sample. So, as we know, Perseverance is a rover. It landed on Mars as part of the NASA Mars 2020 mission. It launched July 30th in 2020, and it landed on Mars in February 2021 in the Jezero crater. And I'm sure we did speak about that when it was when it landed, when we was about to land. So its main mission is to search for signs of microbial life, which is absolutely exciting. So what it does, it searches for clues about life that may have been on Mars, and also You know, it took along little Ingenuity helicopter in its underbelly, and when it landed, and then let it go. And so the other mission is to test technologies for the future exploration of Mars by humans. And we know that Ingenuity had a few test flights and flew really well, and it's actually been flying all over the place since then. So we know that we're able to create a little craft that can fly on Mars. And since it did it so successfully, it's actually the next, it's actually gone into another phase of the mission for the helicopter, because I thought they just thought they were going to fly it a couple of times and that would be it for it. But actually now they've gone into exploring the capabilities of the craft, which will give us some more clues into how do we fly on Mars in the future. So awesome. Mm-hmm. So as part of the mission, Perseverance rover carries a drill for coring into the Martian soil, and it's got tubes for storage of the samples. It also has a camera on board, so the mission people back on Earth can see how successfully or not the sample collection has gone. So an attempt was already made back in early August this year. So they went through the usual protocol. They sent the commands for collecting, coring and collecting. And, you know, first lot of data verified that a depth of 7 centimetres was cored, so they got that far.
Wow, the 7 centimetres, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty deep.
It's pretty deep, yeah.
Yeah. Then the cache cam on board captured images to confirm that, yes, sample was transferred from the corer, and the sample was put in the tube, sealed, and placed into storage. Or so they thought. Unfortunately, the volume measurement and images afterwards taken when the tube, you know, was put away, showed that somehow between storing, you know, coring, putting it in the sample, storing, the soil had come out. They're not really sure what happened. The process worked, but the soil didn't make it. So they had another go. So a second attempt was started on September 1st. So commands for coring using the rotary percussive drill at the end of the Perseverance robotic arm was used. They decided they would sample a rock nicknamed Rochette, and which was flat and briefcase size. So an interesting subject. This time they decided they'd send the steps, the commands step by step. So after coring was completed, the arm manoeuvred so that the Mars Cam Z camera could image the contents of the tube holding the sample, which was unsealed. So then they transmitted these images to Earth so the mission controllers could say, yes, okay, sample's in there. And after confirmation, the command was sent to complete the rest of the process and put away the sample. So the sample was transferred to the rover's interior. It was measured. It was imaged. They confirmed it. Next step.
Cool.
The sample was sealed and imaged. Okay, got the sample. They stored the sample away. So mission successful. They managed to core a rock and grab a sample.
Awesome.
Cool.
So
wow.
What will happen is they also plan to travel to different areas or types of geological areas in the Jezero crater over the next few years. And then future missions are being designed to actually go and get the sample, bring the sample back to Earth.
Yeah.
So for now, they're just being stored on Mars for future missions. So don't get too excited yet about finding results about the samples. So you do have to wait a little while.
Oh, hold on, Caroline.
Yeah.
Are you telling me we have like a mini warehouse on that little rover?
We do.
Rover?
Mm. We do.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah, we do.
It's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, totally. And so the tubes are going to be stored inside the rover, and the rover's going to have travelled between 2.5 and 5 kilometres and fill about 43 sample tubes while going around the crater. The idea is that various regions of the Jezero crater will give a wider picture of what was happening geologically and hopefully biologically in this area of Mars.
Yeah.
So the next location they want to sample will be the delta region of the Jezero crater. It's a fan-shaped area where an ancient river met a lake in the crater itself.
Oh, wow.
They expect it's going to be rich in clay minerals. Now, the cool thing about this is that on Earth, these kind of minerals usually have fossilized microscopic life.
Yes.
Oh, no way.
Because, yes. Yeah, because they're associated with biological processes. So they're made, you know, those minerals usually are a result of a biological process. So I'm even more keen for them to build those missions to go back to Mars and collect those samples ASAP, because I ain't getting any younger. But so, well done to the Perseverance team. It's a really big achievement to be able to collect those samples and to have them stored there. And that rover is just amazing. It's doing amazing things. So, go on the NASA website and have a look. It's got all the mission details there, updates, photos. I love the photos. They're my favorite thing, you know, just seeing Mars, you know, amazing.
Go Percy.
Yeah. What a great mission.
Can't wait to see. Well, I mean, just imagine, everyone, that they managed to get a Mars rock back to Earth, a sample. That'll be a momentous achievement.
Cannot wait.
Tell us, and then find out what it reveals to study it. Yeah.
100%.
So, let's go from Mars to ancient Earth, to the Cretaceous period. And what are these T-Rexes doing? Give us some dinosaur info. Tell us how Cretaceous love hurt, Caroline.
Oh, yes, it did. So on good old Earth, we've had life here for billions of years. I don't know if there's billions, but definitely millions of years. Okay. So, well, who knows? A very early microscopic life. Anyway, so you can ponder on this for a very long time. So we do have millions of years old skeletons and fossils from our good old friend Tyrannosaurus Rex. Well, he might not have been such a good old friend if we met him face to face, but that's another story. So our modern animals, we often know that some of them will fight each other when they reach adulthood. They might be fighting over mates, over territory, over food. And it seems from the fossil evidence that Tyrannosaurus Rex and other dinosaurs like Tyrannosaurus Rex used to fight each other as well. They found theropod skulls, which Tyrannosaurus Rex falls into the class of theropods. They are flesh-eating dinosaurs. They are obligate bipeds, which mean their hind legs are used for providing support and locomotion. And, you know, we all know that T-Rex has these tiny little forelimbs with claws. And
we've all seen Toy Story.
Yes, we have. And, you know, their hands were probably used for grasping and tearing at prey as they try to bite their heads off. And their feet resemble those of birds. And it's so true, because you look at the chicken's feet. Like, I look at my chickens every day and I see those feet and I'm like, they're literally scaly. And I'm like, you were once a dinosaur, right? And they act like they were once dinosaurs too. You just watch chickens for long enough and you'll realize that they are actually dinosaurs.
Awesome. Do you watch them staring at you and then go, clever girl?
Yes, and then she will stare back at me. That's the scary part.
Oh, eek, eek, eek.
So they sampled 528 theropod skulls, and researchers found that 122 of these had deep bite marks and healed lesions on them. So the bite marks actually appeared in 60% of the adult-sized animals and none in the younger ones, which really suggests that the older ones were fighting each other.
I know, how rude
of them. Researchers suggested in a paper in the Paleontology Journal that adult theropods bit each other when they reached adulthood and when they were looking for mates and establishing a social dominance. The bite mark orientation actually suggested that the dinosaurs fought side by side using lateral head swings to grab each other's jaws.
Ouch.
Imagine. Okay, it's fair enough. You're a T-Rex with huge teeth, but you see another T-Rex coming at you with those teeth. Ouch.
Definitely.
I know. So the skulls of smaller theropods were examined to as well. Now, these theropods actually did give rise to today's birds. So, yes, they were once dinosaurs. None of them had bite marks, which it suggests that these animals just, you know, they didn't fight each other anymore over mates or territory or anything. But we do know that some of them had feathers. So there's evidence, what? You know, fossils with feathers. Yes. Ooh, so,
cool.
Yeah, definitely. So they're thinking that they stopped fighting each other, a bit smarter, and just started flapping their beautiful feathers around to catch a mate, you know. So, you know.
Oh,
you,
it's a dance move now, not a violent.
Imagine that, like a dinosaur-y bird thing. And, like, we know that today's birds, a lot of the time, the males of the species will have the more elaborate, fancy feathers. Think of a peacock, for example.
I was going to say peacock. Yeah, that was very, the one that came to mind.
Yeah, a very good example. So have really beautiful feathers and, you know, when they see another male, they'll put their fan up and start flapping it around and, you know, it's supposed to show off to the female, look at me, I'm strong and amazing and gorgeous. So, you know, and it's fun to watch. So it's a much better strategy than bite each other's face off.
Yeah,
exactly,
that's right.
So there you go. Something interesting I just thought, maybe we hadn't actually, I'd never heard of it before. You know, this is a new research suggesting that dinosaurs used to bite each other's faces. So I thought everybody else had to know about this as well. Very, very interesting. I think the more not us necessarily, but paleontologists study dinosaur fossils, the more they learn and, you know, the better picture we have about the way they used to live and interact, and rather than just us looking at bones going, oh yeah, they look cool, but now we get to learn about them. Yeah, amazing.
They wouldn't have bit each other's faces off if they had the internet, I reckon. They would have just sent a nasty comment on Facebook.
That's right.
Yeah,
true.
I'm the alpha. No, I'm the alpha.
No, me. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Don't make me come over there and bite you. I'll do it.
I dare you to.
That's like an extreme version of Face Off, man. Just like, oh, Face Off. Going at each other. Wow. Yeah, it's almost like Gladiator. Are you not entertained?
It's always fascinating, Caroline, like to see how the behaviors of dinosaurs, these, you know, millions of year old animals, how we see a link to the behavior of our current animals. And the evidence, you know, like you said, of, you know, like, because you do look at some birds, like I've looked, you know, like our cassowary here in Australia.
Yes.
I mean, you look at its feet and you think, oh my gosh, that looks like, its feet look just like a velociraptor on Jurassic Park or something. But
and its beak and it's got like this, like a, what do you call it? Not a horn exactly, but it's like, it's got a very hard plate on its head that stands up like a bone mohawk, really. And you go, I'm pretty sure I've seen dinosaur fossils with similar things on them. Yeah.
It's like a modern day dinosaur in some way. It's not reptilian or anything, but the thing is, like, and we know you don't mess with this bird. This bird has killed people.
We know.
In the long list of Australian animals that kill people,
that's one of them.
These are really dangerous.
Cassowaries are gorgeous, but don't go anywhere near it.
They're great to look at, but don't go anywhere near them.
Worse than an emu, just like. An emu will steal your bag of chips, but a cassowary will pack your head.
Yeah, an emu will take your food, but a cassowary. Yeah, and I mean, these are human-sized.
They are taller than me, too. They're just
so you don't want to
meet
one in the wild, yeah. No. Yeah, that or a kangaroo that wants to box you. You don't want to meet them either.
Oh, my goodness.
Like Dom said, the people are beautiful, but the animals want to get them.
Yeah, that's
dangerous.
Right. Always out to catch you. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true.
We've learned to survive. Don't worry for everyone who's listening.
Yes.
Wow.
Cool. Thanks so much for that, Caroline. That's a really interesting topic. Yeah,
yeah,
I love
that. It was fun.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to what's entertaining us. And do you guys mind if I start today?
Because
I've got a bit of a shopping list of things. I won't talk about them for a long time, but just some things that I've been interested in recently. So the first one now, this will be 2 weeks ago by the time this episode comes out. I just want to remind everyone that happened. So, but on last night, Friday night, I watched the Triple C show, which I mentioned before during our discussion at Mission Parishes. So again, Triple C, the three C's stand for Corpus Christi College, which is where we have seminarians in Melbourne training for the priesthood. And I've put a link to the show in the show notes because you can watch it on YouTube. And there are two reasons why I want to talk about it. One, because it was entertaining in a very campy kind of way, and that was deliberate. Another thing is because it's also part of a fundraiser as well to support them. So if you click on the link that I've got here, it'll take you to the YouTube video, and in the description there'll be a link to their website with how you can donate and how you can support them as well. So the show was kind of structured by which year each group of seminarians, you know, so here's a presentation from the first years, here's one from the second year, so on. And the whole idea is it was a showcase of talent. So, you know, there's some musicians and singers who are beautiful. It was a showcase, you know, some of them did skits that were really campy on purpose. So the one I liked a lot was they did one where it talked about third year seminarians, but it did it like a David Attenborough kind of documentary.
No, commentary,
And the way that, and like, so they had a voice that sounded like David Attenborough, you know, like an imitation. And the way they spelt it was David Attenborough, like, you know.
Bruh.
Yeah. And so it goes through, like, what they do. You know, it exaggerated the bad habits that they all have, you know, because they all live together and things like that. So it was quite funny. My wife and I were laughing out loud. It was very entertaining. So anyway, they did that show, and good on them for doing that, especially with the limited, access to things that they have at the moment with the pandemic. So if anyone would like to see seminarians sharing their talents and learn a bit more about the seminarians who are training or discerning the priesthood at the moment at Corpus Christi, you can have a look at that one. The next one is a documentary that I've been loving. They've been sharing two episodes per week, and there'll be another episode coming out at the end of September, I think it is, I think September 30th. And this is a Netflix documentary about the Inspiration 4 crew. So we've talked about this crew before. So it's basically gone through the selection process of the crew. So it reveals more behind how each person was selected. It's gone through their training. It's explained some of their lives and their inspirational stories and why they're on the mission. And it's taken us right up to just before the launch, and with it, you know, showing what's happened. Some of the training is quite grueling. I don't know if I would ever survive the centrifuge. I think I'd probably I'd lose my lunch.
That's one reason. One of them actually did. An astronaut.
Yeah. they did all that, but it also shows, I mean, their determination to get to space and their bonding as a crew. As I speak now, again, this will be 2 weeks from now from when this is recorded. But as I speak, they're actually currently in space, in an orbit of 540 something kilometers, which is the highest orbit at the moment. That so the Dragon capsule can do lower and higher orbits, and this is one of the higher orbits that it can achieve.
Oh, wow.
So they're doing that right now, and they're going to be splashing down on Earth tomorrow. It's Saturday. It'll be Saturday in the United States, Sunday for us. So I'll be looking forward to watching that. I watched their launch, which was really great. Seeing all of that happen. So. There's a lot of material that you can watch about the Inspiration 4 crew, but I'd suggest the documentary on Netflix is great to watch. And there's people have been saying, how come we're not seeing much about what's happening while they're in space? So I think what's happening is that because Netflix owns the rights to so they're filming, they're preparing and editing, and we'll see something soon. There was a Q&A overnight, which I haven't watched yet, with the crew from space, so I'll watch that later on. But that's a really good one. And while we're in space, let's talk about a sci-fi movie that I watched. This one is Blade Runner 2049. I'm actually a fan of the original Blade Runner, although some parts of it are really bizarre. But overall, as a concept, yes, I do enjoy the film and the way it's set up. Lena, did you manage to see Blade Runner the sequel as well, 2049? Or
no, not yet. No, I Caroline? Was watching the original with Bernadette, and. Yeah. I just felt, how long is it? 3 hours?
I think it's a long movie. This one is long as well.
So yeah. I have to rewatch it again. But I loved Harrison Ford in it. He was so young.
That's right.
Or after Star Wars?
After.
Return of the Jedi.
I'm going to say after.
After. Oh my goodness, me. He was in so many franchises. Yeah. Indiana Jones he was just doing. Yeah, but it looks so cool.
Yeah, this one, it's set up as a sequel decades later after, so I think, did the original, I forgot what year on Earth it's meant to be set in. But anyway, this one is set in the year 2049 on Earth. It's still a bit bleak. Things aren't so great. corporations in charge and all that kind of stuff. And really, this to me, was like a part one of what could. There's definitely would need to be another sequel, because there are some storylines that are left open that haven't been, you know. But even the first Blade Runner didn't solve everything and give us an answer to everything either. It was left open. Yeah, so this did the same. However, I enjoyed the story. I thought it was really well put together. I actually think this is a worthy successor to Blade Runner. Sometimes they make sequels and they're terrible. But I think this was a worthy successor to the first Blade Runner film. And I can't really say much about it because it will give away. I could actually ruin the plot with it. But it still explores humanity's relationship to technology, what it means to be human. It explores a lot of those questions that were explored in the first one as well. And the meaning of life and all those kinds of things through a sci-fi lens. So I thought it was a great film, a lot of fun to watch, a beautiful film in some ways in the way that it was filmed. And the director, whose name I can't remember, I'm pretty sure he's also directed the Dune movie, which is coming out.
Which I
really, really, really want to see when we get a chance to. And lastly, speaking of sci-fi, if Blade Runner is an example of sci-fi done well, this next one is an example of sci-fi done so badly that I can't recommend it.
Okay.
So I was flicking through Amazon Prime looking for something else to watch, and I saw this advertisement for a TV show called Pandora, and it's advertised as a future sci-fi show, and it's got spaceships and it's got mystery and all these kinds of things. So I watched the first episode, and I wish I could get that 50 minutes of my life back. It was terrible. It was so, so terrible. If anyone has watched Arrow and The Flash and a lot of those shows on the CW, you might remember that the first couple of seasons of both shows were great, like outstanding. And then suddenly something happened, and it became it's like just emotional people making stupid decisions and that kind of, I can't stand that kind of thing. Right from the get-go, this show is basically that. It's they try and set up a mystery, and I want to be invested in it and find out what happens, but I don't know, like the characters are terrible, the concept is terrible. But as you're watching, like, there are questions like, well, why don't they just do this, why don't they just do that, like, you can solve this right now, that kind of really frustrating kind of thing. And it's, I don't know, I think this is maybe set up, maybe I'm just the wrong person for this, I think it's set up for a younger audience, because it's, you know, it's young people on Earth at a kind of a Starfleet Academy, I guess, if you want to call it that, a really bad version of it though. And then, but there's a mystery involved, because one of the back characters has a backstory of their colony being destroyed mysteriously. And I don't know. I watched it and I was like, this is bad. This is just bad. Anyway, but if anyone else has seen Pandora and I'm wrong, tell me. If I should stick with it and keep watching it, let me know. But I watched the first episode and there was nothing in it that said to me, you need to watch episode two. I don't know. If you guys have Prime and watch it, tell me if I'm wrong. And sorry if anyone's watched it and this their favorite show, but it was I don't know, it was terrible. I don't know how else to describe it. But anyway, maybe I'm just the wrong audience for it. We'll see. And lastly, I just got to say, I'm loving Star Trek Lower Decks. By the time this episode comes out, the latest episode that I watched would be 2 weeks old. I don't know if any of you remember a Next Generation episode in the first season. Remember when Tasha Yar died? She was killed by that swampy mud-looking kind of creature, an Aramis is what it's called. Yeah, it's like this in the episode called Skin of Evil. There's a scene at the very end of this episode where they prank that creature from long distance. They've got this stone that apparently allows you to talk to anyone on any planet, no matter how far away you are, and so they pull it out, because one of them goes, it's not like you could talk to an Aramis or something. They all look at each other like, hey, hey Aramis, you suck, whatever else. And he's like, what? I'll find you. Where are you? I'll kill you. I'm evil. I'm the skin of evil. All these gags. Anyway, I thought it was really funny. The whole episode was worth it just for that scene, because I was laughing out loud. Anyway, that's enough for me. I've watched a couple of things over the last 2 weeks. Caroline, you've been watching some cake reality TV shows. Cool. Tell us all about cake. Nailed It. Or should I say Nailed It?
Nailed It. It's one of my favorite genres of reality TV, making cakes, baking shows. Yeah, I love them. But this one is more like a comedy baking show. Nailed it. I don't know if a lot of people have seen it, but it's one of our favorites for sure. It's on Netflix. And it's basically a competition for people who can't bake, attempting to bake. So they set them tasks. No. They've got Sign two rounds. And the funniest part is always the reveal. You know, they'll say, they always give them a hard task, like something that most of us couldn't make. They're like these extravagant cookies with all this detail on it and whatever. So they'll go, and they always have, so there's Nicole, who's the main character. She's been on many like kind of funny shows before. You've got Jacques Torres, who's an actual a French baker. And so he's an expert, and he makes all these creations. And then there's always a comedian, which makes the show just makes you die, because their comments and, you know, you see them tasting the food and their faces and everything. It's just it's so funny. So they've just released the latest series of Nailed It, which I'm so glad they keep releasing them, because it's just so funny, and me and the kids love it. So they had Wayne Brady on, who is so hilarious. He was on that comedy show, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah,
he was
a
genius.
He was great in that, yes.
Yeah. So, we watched that episode. We watched one episode. It's pretty hard to fit in much TV lately, because we're doing a lot of reading it in the evening instead with the kids. But I also did feel like I was on an episode of Nailed It myself yesterday, because it's my son Harry's birthday tomorrow. And despite being in lockdown, we still want to have a birthday party at home. Yeah. You know, I don't want him to feel left out. Last year he had it at home, and this year he was really disappointed he couldn't have friends and family over. So, So do you guys know about poppets? Kids know about poppets. They're like fidgets, right? These like silicone-y things with it's like bubble wrap, but bubbles, and you just pop them.
Bubble wrap is so much cooler, I just got to say, by the way.
Well, it's pretty cool, but pop it, Lindsay, you got to, you know, pop it.
Yeah, we've got one at home.
Very addictive, yes.
Alex loves it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Harry's got heaps. He just loves poppets. So he wanted me to make him a rainbow poppet cake. Like, okay, let's see how we're going to do this. So, okay, I'm okay at baking cakes. I'm fine at that. Successful, no problem. So I made it rainbow color. Yeah, made a vanilla butter cake, and I just divided up the batter, just dyed each color, and just, you know, put it in a baking tin and just kind of swirled it around. I'm not doing any of this layer stuff. I don't have time. So I swirled it around.
Got time for that.
Yeah. And then the next task was to make a whole bowl of buttercream frosting, or icing, depending where you come from. And then just did the same thing. I split it all up, and then I colored it in the color of the rainbow poppet, which happened to correspond to, you know, I got a packet of Smarties for the actual poppet, like the bubble section.
Oh, cool.
Bits. It actually matched up. So, and then, you know, I just put stripes of buttercream frosting over the cake, and then I put the Smarties on. Now, it didn't look too bad, but it's not that neat. You know, I'm not a professional baker. I'm a home baker. So, yes, I was like, and so I asked the kids, did I nail it? You know, like, nail it. And they're like, oh, yeah, Mum, you nailed it. I'm like, oh, that's like the best compliment, because if they had said, no, you did not nail it, I would have died.
Oh.
But the kids, and then Harry's face, like he lit up. He's like, Mum, how did you even do that? So, okay, I felt okay.
But what would Wayne Brady have said about your cake, Caroline?
Wayne Brady tasted it. I don't know what he'd say, but anyway, the bits that I sampled from cutting it off tasted really good, so I was happy with that. And yeah, and the other thing we're still doing is, like I mentioned, we're reading every night. So my TV time is gone. So, but it's okay, because the kids have been having, you know, a hard time settling at night in the lockdown. They don't do much activity, physical activity during the day. So we wind down with reading funny books. So last time I mentioned World Worst Children by, I forgot his name, David Williams.
Yeah.
And now we're on to World's Worst Teachers, Lindsay.
Whoa.
Thanks. As a teacher.
Oh, thanks for thinking of me straight away when you said that.
I thought of you. So let me tell you, the teacher's book is much better than the children's book.
Wow.
These teachers that they come up with, Wow. So a highly recommended book if you're into funny children's stories that are very Roald Dahl-esque. So yeah,
cool. I'll have to read it as professional development and see what I get out of it.
Yeah, this is what you not to do, you know. Like, it's hilarious. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'll read one at night and they're like, another one. So I read two at night. By then I'm exhausted, they're exhausted, and we just fall asleep. So
it's good move.
And the last thing that I've been getting back into is playing my Switch and playing Pikmin 3 Deluxe. I know it's not a new game, but it's a real favorite in our house. And
it's a great game, yeah.
Yeah, so we've been addicted to that again. So nothing really new, but, you know, that's what we've been doing for entertainment.
That's good. All right, well, Lena, let's cross over to you. So you are just about near the end of Rosehaven now, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I think we were about four episodes left in this. That's just the last season. Love the show.
So just as good?
Yes. It's a bit of a change now with the characters, as in relationship-wise, let's say. So, yeah, it's so good. I was laughing all throughout of a situation they had to, I can't remember. Oh, they had to do a fun run. That was it. That's all I was saying. They're trying to do a fun run all together and trying to get people in and involved in it. And yeah, it was a great episode.
When I was looking for a new show, I should have gone to that instead of Pandora. What a terrible mistake.
You'll love Rosehaven.
I can't say much of Pandora because I haven't seen it. Pandora, Lizzie. I think we talked about it before. I thought about the jewelry. A reality show for jewelry.
There is more
jewelry.
Value in the jewelry of Pandora than there is in the show, trust me.
Whoa.
So bad.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, we digress.
Look, like Caroline said, classics are always classics, guys. You know, you play classic video games, it's always, we've got Wii games still, guys.
We've got Nintendo Wii games.
They're so good. They never get tired. No. You just want to keep playing them. Love them. Yeah.
Every new version of Mario Kart is awesome.
Oh, yes. There's a new Switch OLED coming out. So it's really the improvement is the screen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm going to, you know, be justified in buying another one because it's not really any different.
I'll buy your old one.
Okay, actually, let's talk after this and we can work something out.
We'll tell everyone next episode how we resolve this.
But I've been dying for, years ago they've been saying Pikmin 4 will be created, but they never came out with it. They made Pikmin 3 Deluxe, which just had a few more levels on it.
Oh.
But I'm still waiting for that. Yeah.
Well, I hope it'll come through.
Lino, you've also been playing Star Citizen, is that right?
Yeah.
This is an interesting one because it's still like a GoFundMe project or something, isn't it? Or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so guys, this game is still in an alpha production. So alpha means that these people are still developing it while you're playing it. So there's bugs galore. it's hilarious. So I remember when I first got it, I think it was 2019 when I got it. I was like, oh, it's so cool. Oh, the first bug was the classic where you enter your ship, Caroline, and the ladder will come down and kill you. Every time you want to go into your ship, it will kill you somehow.
What kind of bug is that?
I think they need to fix that.
Oh, definitely. And then some ships have a rear docking. I can't remember what it is, like a ramp. Yeah. And I think logically, if you stand underneath the ramp coming down, you'll die.
Of course.
And you think, all right, I'll go on the side. You still die. Opening from the side. Anywhere you open, it was so frustrating trying to get to your ship. And another classic bug was the elevator killing the elevator. So if you were going to an elevator and you see just a black abyss, do not go in there. And it doesn't matter. Oh, sorry. Even though it's not a black abyss and you think you're safe in the elevator, if you press a button going up and down, the floor below you disappears and you'll fall right through into the planet.
I don't think they were ready for beta testing.
No. Yeah. No, definitely not. For all the listeners out there and all of us who know Wing Commander.
Wing Commander, classic.
Creator of Wing Commander. And the funny thing is, they hired Mark Hamill, of course, the legendary Luke Skywalker, to play one of the characters in Wing Commander. So he's asked Mark Hamill to come back and do an appearance of his new game called Squadron 42. Don't quote me on if it's any connection with Wing Commander, but I think it's a separate project.
Yeah, I think it might be separate, yeah.
I think it's a separate project.
Yeah, it uses the same mechanics as Star Citizen. Hopefully those bugs will be gone by then, but it's a enclosed storyline game, isn't it? Compared to Star Citizen, which is like an open world, you know, multiplayer. Multiplayer or something.
It's an MMO, so multiplayer, massive multiplayer online thing.
That's the one, yeah.
But the problem is like with every game, guys, it's like, all right, it's Kickstarted or crowdfunded, good. He got millions and millions of dollars throughout this. Yeah. But it has been going over, I'm saying 10 years now? Don't quote me, but there's hundreds and hundreds of YouTube and Twitter things about this game. If you have a chance, see the comments of some people who have done anything about this game, and they think it's either a scam or he's got too much money.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm not saying it's a bad game. It is a beautiful game, guys. Yeah, if you have a chance to play it, have a go at it. And the only thing, it sounds like a scam, because when you get the game, you have to buy starter packs.
Of course.
Old starter, you know, here one of those days, you just have to start a pack and you get a free pack of knives for it.
Enhance your experience by purchasing this pack. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You can buy this and get one free. But that's how it is.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, it's in US dollars, but you guys in the US, you're cool. For us, US dollars is about 73 cents to the US dollar. So,
it's very expensive
for us. So you get a starter pack, you get into your ship, and then you just do missions. It's pretty good, Caroline. It's sci-fi, but what I love about it, it's so detailed in landing onto a planet. Mm. It takes forever. It's like actually landing on a planet. It's not one of those sci-fi things you just go, boom, you're on there. I'm serious, you could be there for almost 5 or 10 minutes trying to land on the planet as you go through the atmosphere into the onto the surface of the planet. And it's a great game, guys.
It does sound good.
It is. It's just, I think this thing is going to go for another 10 years.
It just needs to be finished, doesn't it?
It just needs to be finished.
In their defense, because it could read like a scam, you're right. I think one thing that is going on is that it is so ambitious, because it's not you're not just flying spaceships. It's also a first-person, you know, shooter, explorer,
flight sim.
Yeah, so the controls are meant to be a lot more realistic. It's not just left, right, up, down, and things like that. Lino and I have history in a game that's very complex. I don't know if you remember, but what was that game where we were doing just the tutorial when we were younger? I think it was like 11 o'clock at night. Remember where you had to take the bomber and had to, where to make the bomber? What was the game called? Do you remember?
Which bomber is that? BF?
Was it B-29 or something?
B-29?
B-29. Yeah. Caroline, this was a World War II game. It was a flight simulator this is a while ago now, but where you had to fly a B-29. We were doing the tutorial because the controls were really complex.
Caroline.
So we were engine one, engine two, throttle mix, you know, the mixture, fuel mixture, all that ready.
Really flying it.
We had the plane roaring on the ground and it wouldn't move. We're like, what's going on? And I kid you not. So we're going through the manual. We find out you have to press T to release the tailwheel lock.
Okay, the lock, yes.
It took us an hour. The tailwheel apparently has a brake where you have to press the T button.
So this is like a warbird type aircraft.
It was one of those four-engine World War II bombers.
It's like
why it would be complicated, Yes. Not like when we used to play F-15 simulator and, you know, just press autopilot and then just bomb Iraq or whatever it was.
That was it.
That was very old game now.
Yeah,
it was only like a few colors.
Yes, it was.
That's right. It was one of those monochrome games, what do you call it?
Whoa.
Yes. Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap it up there. Yeah, that was great. Lots of some of the flashbacks to the past there at the end. Yeah, a bit of nostalgia. But we want to thank you all for joining us for episode 65 of The Catholics of Oz. And before we go today, we would love to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Catholics of Oz. Today, we would love to thank Christian D, Donald A, Father Burke M, Seth, and Philip G. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for The Catholics of Oz and all of the other shows on StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we'd love to know what you thought about some of the topics that we've discussed today. We've gone into some very serious and some very light topics, so we'd love to hear your opinions on any of those. You can send us feedback by visiting sqpn.com/oz, where you can also find our show notes from today's topics. While you're on the SQPN website, you can sign up for the Insiders Club newsletter and get updates for your favorite shows at sqpn.com/about/newsletter. And if you're a North American listener, you can join the StarQuest fan club mailing list by sending a text message to StarQuest at 66866. Send StarQuest to 66866. You can also You can also visit us at the SQPN Facebook page at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. And also don't forget that the Catholics of Oz has its own Facebook page where we share pictures of Caroline's bugs and pets and all kinds of other things.
Oh, I'm getting more, by the way. Anyway.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll have to find out more about the more photos next episode. Yeah. Nice. But you can find that at facebook.com/Catholics of Oz, spelt OZ, and all are welcome. Please feel free to come and join us. And you can also send us an email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us for this jam-packed episode today.
Thank you. It was really fun, as always.
Yes. And Lido, thank you so much for also being on the show as well.
It's been awesome, guys. Tyrannosaurus Rex, man. That's tough love. Ouch.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Sorry.
She's got that one.
Yep. She
had
does.
To get one
yep.
in.
Yep. I'd say you have the upper hand because the T-Rex never will. You're welcome. Thank you. And once again, I'm Lindsay Sands.
Almost kept it together.
Almost. Thank you so much for listening to episode 65 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.
Daddy Shortlegs here. Yo, I'm back again on today.